Mesmerism. That term has an interesting background, but since dictionaries are very unreliable because they've been changed over the years, it's difficult to tell exactly what is really meant by that term from the source of dictionaries that are available today. Unfortunately, Noah Webster, 1828 dictionary, does not comment on it, and the 1913 edition is not reliable because most of the definitions that Noah Webster produced and the estate was bought out by the Merriam brothers, one cannot rely on anything except the 1828 original dictionary. If you're looking for the dictionary definition from Noah Webster himself. And it appears, out of all the resources that we know of, that he is the most spiritual individual that ever produced a dictionary. He quotes from the Bible frequently in his dictionary. Well, the word mesmerism is derived from an individual by the name of Franz Mesmer, who lived back in the 1700s to mid-18s, and it appears to originally be connected to astrology, which indicates that the heavenly bodies, stars, the moon, and so forth, have an influence over human bodies. It indicates that it's energy transferred from the inanimate to animate. Franz Mesmer himself apparently coined the term animal magnetism. Mary Baker Eddy has used that throughout her works and giving it a broader term of all evil. The dictionaries also refer to suggestion, also hypnotism. Because we cannot really depend on what it really means from a book, other than probably the most reliable is Mary Baker Eddy's works, because she actually lived back in those days in the early 1800s and mid-1800s, which was the end of Mesmer's life on Earth. Since we know we can rely on Mary Baker Eddy, this recording will employ her use, which basically means that one is being influenced erroneously, the opposite of being influenced by the qualities of God. A non-thinking, non-wholesome, materialistic influence. Anytime there is an influence that is less than godlike, it is mesmeric, hypnotic. It is a suggestion from an evil theory. It is having life, truth, and intelligence in matter, or mortal mind, which is supposedly the source of matter. I say supposedly because there is no real source for matter, because the only reality, the only spirit, is good, and spirit is the only substance. And there's nothing good about mesmerism or hypnotism or animal magnetism or anything that's unlike God. Even a taint of something imperfect is not godlike. If you buy diamonds, if they are absolutely flawless, which I don't know that there is any, I think they're all measured in degrees of flawlessness. But spirit is defined as flawless. No imperfections. No opaqueness. Totally transparent. And of course, that's part of the definition of spirit. Transparent. And therefore, reflective. Now, the most dangerous part of mesmerism or hypnotism or animal magnetism is when we don't realize that it is influencing us. So we're blinded. We might think we're absolutely right about something, and we would be totally wrong. And of course, the most important thing to be right about something is knowing what God is, what man is, and the relationship between God and man. So the dangerous part is if we don't know that that's the truth, and we think the truth is something else. We think that we are sick, diseased, sinful, even dead. Bicknell Young relates an experience that he had where he had actually drowned, was deemed dead by those around him. Apparently he had no pulse, and the color of everything about him was indicating that he was dead. And in the experience that he relates, he could see them looking at his body. Now, I won't say any more about it because you can read about it on the website, and he gives the details of the entire experience. Mary Baker Eddy emphasizes how important it is to be joyful. She says, laughing. In other words, getting your thought off of anything that appears to be dreary, whether it's sadness from an event that seems to have taken your joy away. It could be any number of things. If it's not a joyful atmosphere that you are surrounding yourself with through your thoughts, of course, doesn't really matter what the face or the description appears to be. If it's anything less than joyful, it's not godlike. So we need to do something about it. And laughing is one way to do it, you know, thinking of something, this is more of a humanistic way, but thinking of something that's funny. A more spiritual way is thinking about anything at all that is godlike. Singing is a good way to get your thought off of something that is dreary. Even smiling. It is impossible to smile and be sad if you're really smiling. If you love people, if you just love, if you just express love, you have to be smiling. You have to be joyful. You cannot be sad or frowning if you are genuine in your smile and your joy. I've said often, fake it till you make it. So that's kind of a desperation move. In other words, you're using self-will in one respect to say, well, I'm going to smile regardless of what kind of trouble I have. Of course, a more spiritual way would be to be inspired spiritually instead of trying to force it. But forcing it is better than ignoring it. And I presume that if you force it, being very genuine about it, you will probably be transforming your thought, where you will be opening the door to let some real joy in, so that the joy will be coming forth from within. And of course, that's the ideal thing. If you fill your thoughts with what God is, what man is, and the relationship, that's not forcing it. That's not faking it till you make it. That's creating the atmosphere that you want to be emitting to anyone in your realm of thought or in your realm of appearance. Just walking down the street and being joyful, smiling at people. I don't mean a fake smile. I mean smiling because you've got lots of reasons that you can think of to be happy. Are you happy you're alive? Are you happy you're walking? Not everyone can walk. They're in a wheelchair, maybe paralyzed. Totally, I don't know. But you can certainly think of lots of reasons to be joyful and thankful. If one is under the belief of a lack of supply of whatever, anything, could be food, shelter, clothing, could be friends, whatever it is you think you lack, if you are grateful, I don't mean grateful to be in lack, but think of reasons that you should be grateful, that you realize you do have an abundance of. For example, life. 1,440 minutes a day. We all have that. How do we want to use it? We know the sun is shining. We may not see it. It may be covered up with clouds. But based on past experience, sooner or later, we're going to see it. We're breathing. Some people have trouble breathing. Don't think about you being better off than they, but think about that you are grateful that you're breathing. Can you run? Can you walk fast? Some people can't do that. I heard someone just in the last couple of days, very bright guy, he said he could not run anymore. He's only 41, according to the Christian calendar. 41 years old and he can't run. He's a veteran. He was injured. He didn't say whether he was in a wheelchair or not. I didn't see him personally. I read something, I watched a video and listened to an MP3 and read some things that he wrote. He's an expert on the constitutional law, which is of interest to me unequivocally. Yeah, he said he could not run. I don't have any problem running. I should be grateful. I should express my gratitude for that. When I go shopping, I walk fast. When I have an opportunity to run without being noticed, so I'm not attracting attention, you don't want to be running when you're going through a shopping mall or something, or even on the street. People would probably think that you're have some kind of an emergency and you don't want to attract attention giving that false appearance. Many things to be grateful for. And so far I've mentioned things that are primarily in a human sense, but think about the spiritual sense. Are we grateful for Mary Baker Eddy? Wow. Anyone who studies Christian Science is given an independence where they don't have to depend on other people for their well-being. Name one person that is not a student of Christian Science that can honestly say that. Doesn't matter how much money you have, you can lose it because it's made out of so-called matter. You can have lots of friends. You can lose them all. You can have great artistic talent. And it could be taken away from you due to some whatever ailment, you name it. Everyone has a multitude of things that they really could be grateful for. And if you're not joyful and you want to cultivate joy, then you need to cultivate gratitude. If you're lacking something, cultivate gratitude. Gratitude is the cure-all for a lack with any kind of a description you can imagine. Are you lonely? Do the things you enjoy doing, and you will meet the kind of people that enjoy doing what you enjoy doing. Forget trying to shop for a friend or a husband or wife or whatever. Just do what you enjoy doing. Live your life. Live the life that doing the things you enjoy doing. And if you're working, enjoy what you're doing. And when you enjoy what you're doing, even though you may think you don't like doing it, the door will open up for you to have other opportunities, very likely doing exactly what you enjoy doing. And then it's not work. Friends that I have, they never stop working. They don't need to work. They're not required to work to provide the standard of living they would like to have. But they work because they enjoy it. So it's not work. It's not work. And when it's not work, then you're going to have fun doing it. We cannot afford to take on the burden of mesmerism. And being unhappy is mesmerism, hypnotism, animal magnetism. Give it any term you want. They are all basically meaning the same thing, generically being ungodlike. We don't want to be ungodlike. Therefore, it's very easy to realize that if we study, think about, contemplate, practice what God is, any student of Christian Science should certainly be aware of the definition of God on page 465, incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Mind is anything to do with thinking or intelligence, wisdom, knowing, capacity, capability, creative ability, performance, which is putting all those together with action, coming up with power. And we know that it's omnipresent because these are qualities. These aren't something that are restricted to geography or race or creed or anything else. Well, I don't know about creed. Creed is kind of what you believe, but yeah. So it is dependent upon creed. If you're going to be a sourpuss, you're not going to make it. You've got to shake it. It rhymes. Yeah. You're not going to make it. You've got to you got to shake it. Shake, rattle, and roll. The beauty of what Mary Baker Eddy gave us is infinite. It's 360. There's no limit. It's everywhere. It's omnipresent. Complete. And all we have to do is think about that quote from Isaiah. I think it's Isaiah. That says, precept upon precept. Precept upon precept. Line upon line. Line upon line. Here a little, there a little. So precept means the fact. We gather our facts and we focus on the facts. And of course, spiritual is the only real fact that exists. So gather the facts, line upon line. I believe that means looking in all directions. No matter which way we look, there are facts there about God because God's omnipresent. And then here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy says, don't try to accomplish everything in one day, like these guys that want to get rich quick in whatever kind of gimmick that is enticing them to do such things. Everything of value requires identifying things that are true, focusing on them, cultivating your entire life around them, and then you will have fulfillment. You will have success. You will be knocking mesmerism so far out of the park that it'll be out of existence. You will be exposing it as being without any value, and you won't give it any credence anymore. It's gone. You've whipped it. Now, don't think that you can sit back on your laurels and do nothing and just coast even for a moment. Jesus took Peter, James, and John up the mountain. He left them partway up. And he asked them, he says, watch. Watch for me. Because he wanted to go on up higher and be by himself to commune with God in solitude. He came back. They were asleep. He says, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? I mean, John was the one that is credited for writing Revelation. It was really dictated by Jesus to John, who came back in the flesh to do it. That's all documented in the Bible. Dr. Robert C. Putnam gives you all the references that tells you exactly what I just mentioned in short summary form. So here's John, which was the one that was closest to Jesus because he understood him better than anyone else. But at that moment, he ended up being a traitor. He didn't watch. Later, he experienced being put in a pot of boiling oil, and he survived. They figured they couldn't kill him, so they'd send him off to the island of Patmos. Greatest thing they could have ever done, because that's where he was able to take down the words of Jesus and give them to us as the book of Revelation, which tells us to take off the old man, put it away, throw it away, and take on the new man. Then we can see heaven on earth, the new heaven, new to us. We have to be very careful when we advance in our spiritual understanding to be alert, because it's not static. Evil is not static. Well, it's a belief, but the belief of evil is not static because it tries to mock truth. We cannot afford to let it trick us, mesmerize us, hypnotize us, attract us. I like to think of animal magnetism as an attraction to evil. You know, magnetism, magnet. In fact, back in the old days, they tried to use magnets to force it away. The real solution is not something mechanical or electrical. It's being transformed in your thought about what is true and what is false. And what is true has nothing to do with a piece of metal, a magnet. What is true has to do with spiritual qualities. I mentioned mind. I'll quickly just go over the others of the seven synonymous terms in the definition of God. First of all, the first four words, they're adjectives, incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. Incorporeal means it's not body. So God is not a person with a fleshly body, unless you want to say that God is infinite person, but then that would not be material, that would be spiritual, because nothing composed of matter could be infinite. Incorporeal, divine, well, when you think of something divine, you know, it like has no flaws. I mean, it's the ultimate. Supreme means there's nothing greater. And infinite, no limitation. Already mentioned terms about mind. Spirit is substance. Yes, I mentioned it. Flawless, transparent, and reflective. Referred to a diamond. That I don't know that they have such a thing. Certainly not spiritual. You could lose it. It could be damaged. So it's not spiritual. A diamond might reflect some spiritual qualities, but it's not the pure thing. It's not the real McCoy. Soul is qualities that are the senses, like seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. And because spirit is the only substance, they are spiritual. So when we see, we should be looking for spiritual things, spiritual qualities, not material, not being mesmerized by matter, being mesmerized by money, for example, doesn't help you gain independence. Many countries have had currency where it became worthless. So don't count on currency as being permanent. Principle is system and structure, and it has to be harmonious and in balance, or it's not going to be of a spiritual nature. Remember, everything has to be of a spiritual nature because spirit is the only substance. So that means principle has to be of a spiritual nature. So don't say, well, I'm going to require this guy to do this because I'm going to stand on the principle of it. I've said that. Yeah, I sure have. Foolish, but I've said it. We don't care about a human principle. We care about a divine principle, a spiritual principle. Life is living the qualities of God. Truth is staying on the path of what is real versus what is unreal. 7 plus 11 is not 15. 7 plus 11 is 18. That's true in mathematics. Anything different is not true. Assuming that your 7 and your 11 are not flexible, describing a flexible object like putty. In fact, even water, depending on the temperature, you might have 7 elements of water and 11 elements of water in another container, but if you heat them up, they become evaporated. There's nothing that is material that you can depend on to give you the truth about mathematics. Unless you are defining it and say, okay, this is this much water in this container and this much water in this container at this temperature with no outside influence, then you're getting closer to being able to rely on 7 plus 11 being 18. But even with the mathematics, there's an example. Anything that is material that you're referring to with mathematics, it's probably going to be flexible based on temperature and all the other factors involved. How about a house? You count houses. You have a tornado come along and wipe them all out. Well, you don't have three plus four houses anymore. You don't have 7 houses or 3 apartments and 4 office buildings, if that's your real estate investment. You don't have them anymore. They're wiped out. Maybe the insurance company went bankrupt, so you're not getting anything from that. You cannot depend on anything, including mathematics, to add up something that is material, because it can change. It's like the man that had 3 sons, and he was getting up in years, and he thought, okay, I will give my estate away to my 3 sons, and I'd like for them to all be happy, so I'm going to let them choose what they want. I've got land, I've got a house, and I've got a very unusual library. So he gave his eldest son the first choice. And he said, I like to have the land. He says, no matter what happens, the land will always be there. Fire is not going to take it away. I don't know in the story whether or not there were trees on it or whatever. But he said, that is the least likely thing to be damaged and destroyed. And the other one said, well, I would like to have the house. And they wrote these down on a piece of paper, and then they gave it to their dad, who read them one at a time. So the other 2 sons didn't know, the one son knew what was on his piece of paper, and the other 2 sons did not, because he kept it private. The father didn't know. Maybe all 3 of them wanted the same thing, or 2 of them wanted the same thing. Then he'd probably have to sell them, or sell it and divide up the money or something. So anyway, the second son, and he gave the oldest one the first choice, the next oldest the second. The second son wanted a house. He didn't know that no one else wanted it. He just said, I want the house. He said, I could have parties here. I could entertain. He said, I would have a comfortable place to live, and I'd be very happy. So he came to the third son Everybody was anxious to find out what the third son wanted. Believe it or not, he wanted the library. And his father said, well, that's very interesting. Why do you want the library? He says, well, Dad, he said, we could have a tornado. We could have an earthquake that could damage the land. We could have any number of things that could wipe out the house. He said, but the library I'm going to learn from, and nobody can take that away from me. It's always going to be with me no matter where I am. I'm going to read it. I'm going to study it. I'm going to learn from it. And that's what I want from the library. Not the books, but what I will learn from it. And hopefully, hopefully he would do his learning before anything happened to the books. Because books can certainly be damaged. You know, water, dampness, sun, fire, water, any number of things can damage the books, but not what you learn from it. Hopefully there's a lot of spiritual books in there. Bibles and writings of Mary Baker Eddy and other very inspired spiritual people. So we cannot depend on matter. And if we're mesmerized, chances are matter is going to be a part of it. I mean, we can't be mesmerized with spirit, so matter has to be the total thing that is the object of mesmerism. All these crooked politicians, how do they become crooked? Well, many of them become crooked because they are enticed. That is something that they couldn't control. They entice them with, you know, immoral activities. Maybe drug them, you know, take them to a restaurant or something and give them, what do they call it, a Mickey in their drink. And they get drugged, and then they entice them while they're drugged. Then they take pictures of them, and they blackmail them. Or they offer them a drug which is addictive, and then they become addicted to it. In fact, many things that they produce are addictive. One of the biggest problems that we have in the world today is the opioid crisis. And that means drugs that are prescribed by doctors. And they have addictive things in the drugs for the purpose of having people get hooked on it. Yeah, that's one of our biggest problems. So, matter, this just came to me. In fact, everything I say is, you can probably tell, is extemporaneous. It's certainly not polished, but that's the way most of these prayer treatments are. A thought might come to me of something where there's a need, maybe something I read just before I started talking, recording, that said, well, that's something that we really ought to discuss, think about, contemplate on. So we definitely have to be careful every moment. And error in the form of mesmerism, hypnotism, animal magnetism, tries to make it be real to us, even though it has no power to do anything itself. We are the ones that give it a home. We let the salesman get the foot in the door, and then he gets his whole leg in. And I mean, we don't have the heart to put him outside because he's already halfway in the house. So we open the door and let him come on in. Wentworth Winslow says, imagine yourself in a room with a phone and a radio. The radio is tuned into KOG, Kingdom of God. The only thing it's doing is one-way monologue announcing the qualities of God. That's it. And man and everything spiritual. That's what it's putting out, which is the opposite of mesmerism. That's the precept upon precept. And then the phone is the other object, and it ringing its head off. Mary Baker Eddy would not permit a phone to be installed in her house because she did not want to have that thought come in her house unannounced. She wanted to control what was entering in her home for her and her household. She had a household of experienced Christian Scientists, and they were selected very carefully because she wanted to teach them so that they would be certified to have a CSD, that means Doctorate of Christian Science, degree. She selected the best. They had to know how to handle electricity. They had to know how to handle the weather. They had a certain schedule that they had to study certain things every single day. In fact, it's called the Household 39. We put that name on it because there's 39 topics that are covered. They had to study those every day. It's about 9 typewritten pages in the format that we did it, and we have it also in audio. If you understand what's in those, and of course, understanding is a progressive term. Today you think you understand something, and tomorrow you get new inspiration. And she put this together, Mary Baker Eddy, 39 topics. Boy, it covers everything you can imagine. And it flows like smooth as glass. From one topic to another, they are totally connected. The one you can see is really a prerequisite to understand the next one. It's just amazing the way she was inspired to do that. We offered another prayer treatment just yesterday or the day before. And it says real or unreal, real versus unreal. That's what every moment of our life is. It is an opportunity to use the filter to determine what is real and what's unreal, so that we don't let into consciousness anything that is unreal. Very long-term friend of mine, an excellent Christian Scientist, and one day I asked her, I said, what do you think about when you give a treatment? And she said, well, I let the individual talk. I don't ask him any questions. They're contacting her because they want help. So they just, you know, she says, hello, and, you know, here I am, you know, lay it on me. So she lets them talk. And then when they get done, she says, okay, I'll work on it. She doesn't have a discussion with them. She just says, I'll work on it. So I said, well, how long do you work on it? She said, well, she says, first of all, I have to get rid of everything they told me. She said, but if you don't let them talk, then they feel frustrated and they'll want to call you back and tell you more. So she says, I let them talk because they have to get it out of their system. Because if they were spiritual enough to get it out of their system before they called me, they wouldn't be calling me. So it's something that they have figured out that they can't handle themselves. They don't know what to do. They're kind of, you know, without options for doing it for themselves. And that's why they call someone else. That's why somebody goes to a medical doctor. They think they have to have care from someone else. So she said, well, it depends. She said it could take me up to a half hour or so. Now, she's not even working on the case. What she's doing is trying to get out of her thought everything that they pushed into it. Everything they pushed into it. I had a situation one time where someone was trying to tell me about something catastrophic that happened. As soon as they started talking, I knew there was a problem. And I didn't want to take it in. Now, I don't know whether this was right or wrong at the time, but I felt like I did not want to accept it. Whatever it is, I didn't want to accept it. I don't know whether they thought I was rude or what, but what I did, and this was when I was very young in CS, I started saying truths that I know up to that time had been an anchor. For example, I remember distinctly I was referring to the scientific statement of being. This is all silently, of course. Kind of not looking straight in the guy's eyes or whatever. He was trying to tell me about this tragedy. And in fact, I had my eyes closed. I mean, it was obvious, if he really was paying attention, it was obvious that I wasn't paying attention to him. But that's what I was doing. That's the only thing I could think to do. I mean, he was giving it to me with such enthusiasm, and not the enthusiasm of joy, but in tragedy, that I knew I had to keep as straight a thought as I could. So that's exactly what I did. I blocked out what he was trying to say, and I don't know, he must have gone on for 10 minutes. So, a devilish, unwholesome thought tries to mock anything it can to get attention. So we have to not think that we're going to cruise because we just had a new inspiration, but we have to keep on our guard, on our watch all the time. All the time. Because as we advance, we have more advanced levels of the temptation of evil to try to distract us. We have to stay on watch all the time. It's a constant thing. Constant. One of the authors listed on the website, we have over 90 of them, 90, and one of them was having a terrible time with his life. And he was talking to his friend about it. This is all reported in a recording on our website. But he was talking to a friend about it. And the friend was a longtime Christian Scientist. And his friend asked him, he said, well, how much are you studying? He said, well, I don't have time to study. I have to do this, this, and that. And I only have like 6 hours left. And I sleep. He said, well, if you're not studying 5 hours, don't expect to be making any great advancement in CS. I mean, it knocked him off his chair because he didn't feel he had any time, let alone 5 hours a day. What was he going to do, sleep 1 hour? Well, they stayed together a few more minutes, and the other guy didn't say anything. So finally, after sitting there with the other guy silent and him trying to figure out how's he going to solve his problem because he can't study 5 hours a day, he took a stand. He said, okay, I'm going to do it. The guy had not said anything. You know, he made the one he made the one statement and kept quiet. You know, like Mary Baker Eddy and Jesus. Jesus didn't argue when people didn't agree with him. Herod, he didn't argue with Herod when Herod said, "What is truth?" He didn't argue with the soldiers when they came to arrest him. Peter cut off the ear of one of them and said, "Put up thy sword, Peter." And then he healed the guy instantaneously. Jesus said, "Say just nay, nay, yea, yea. If you agree, say yea. If you don't agree, say nay." Mary Baker Eddy didn't argue with people. They said she was prayerless. This was the media. They published it in some kind of a newspaper or magazine. She's a prayerless woman. She doesn't read the Bible. What a joke. So anyway, she didn't argue with him, but right shortly thereafter, she wrote a piece for one of the publications. I don't know what newspaper it was, but I think it was the Boston Herald. Anyway, she stated that I pray three times a day. And she said, with my face toward the New Jerusalem, which means that it's after the people went through the 40 years in the desert, and they became really sincere, genuine about following God. Keep your guard up. Don't go to sleep like Peter, James, and John. We have to keep it up all the time. All the time. Think about something that you really feel you've got a good handle on. Scientific statement of being, definition of God. Quotes at the beginning of the book. The introductory quotes at the beginning of Science and Health basically summarize the entire textbook. "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." That's from John. Shakespeare is the next one. "Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." What kind of thinking am I going to do right now? In other words, don't just repeat the words. Make it your own. What does it mean, "ye shall know the truth"? Well, the truth about God, the truth about man, the relationship between God and man. Think about it when you are in trouble. Well, you should think about it when you're not in trouble, but think about it when you're in trouble. You've got to go to an anchor where you cannot be mesmerized, where you cannot yield to the temptation to be enticed into letting the belief of life, truth, and intelligent matter overwhelm you. And the third one is from Mary Baker Eddy, and it says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest." That means God's behest. Thou here and everywhere. Give gratitude for something. Not for the trouble that is facing you, unless you want to say, "Thank you for this opportunity to wake me up." You can give gratitude for that. Everything is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to see that God is working, or it's an opportunity to get to work. One or the other. Gratitude. That's the key. That's the key. And don't be tricked by thinking the symptom is pointing to the right direction on what to try to solve the problem about. It could be a decoy. You can fill in the blanks. Any number of things. You're on the way to an important meeting and your car breaks down. Or you get in a big traffic jam. These could be symbols to try to tell you that you're not going to make it to the meeting. "Sorry, Charlie. I'm going to hold you up here. It's important for you to be there. Maybe you're conducting the meeting. And I'm going to interfere." We offer several prayer treatments on interference. Some very important things to state mentally, emphatically, and that is that nothing can interfere with the truth of these thoughts that come to me. The effectiveness, the power. Nothing can dilute them, divert them, distract, take away the capacity, the facility, the capability, the action. Nothing can stop it, and nothing can reverse the truth. It is permanent, omnipresent. God is all in all source and all manifestation. And there really is nothing but God, which includes His manifestation. Amen.